interestingly, I have discovered that 9 times out of 10, my destination will choose me instead of me choosing the destination. So it usually chooses me in the form of some interesting opportunity, whether it's to speak at a conference or whether it's to visit somebody.
Welcome to the New Nomad Podcast, hosted by Alan and Andrew of Insured Nomads. Join us as Alan and Andrew interview and explore the community of people and ideas that embody the nomadic spirit. Tune in to incredible discussions with thought leaders each week that will help you take full advantage of the cross-border remote work lifestyle. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to the New Nomad. We have Nora Dunn with us today, aka the professional hobo, a remote work expert, a person who's been to 60 plus countries, has some really unique and fun stories today, and also some great tips on travel, finance, et cetera. But before we get to that, Andrew, how are you doing today? Where are you at? And how are things on this fine day?
Things are very well, thank you. I just have had a fun week, been active in the Alabama-Germany partnership events of the week. And since we are active in both areas, Birmingham, Alabama, as we're recording this. And where do we find you today, Alan?
Well, I'm back in the home office of Wilmington, Delaware. And as I reflect on our conversation today, we talked to Nora, I thought it was very interesting. She has obviously a varied travel background. And there was one thing that stood out, a kangaroo that fell in love and followed her around for months. And once again, inquiring minds want to know, but we'll get to that. But it started me thinking about my travels and some of the animal stories we have. And I'll just mention to you, Andrew, I went to Egypt once and I was traveling with another person. And when we went to the pyramids, we were offered a donkey or a camel. And I quickly grabbed the donkey, and the person I was traveling with was morally indignant. Like, why wouldn't you take the camel? It's much higher, much more fun. I'm like, when the camel gets up, you're going to have to hang on for dear life. And it's like, no, it's not that bad. Camel got up. We were probably like maybe a couple degrees from the person going off the back of maybe a 16, 18 foot camel. And we might've had an evacuation. So I was just thinking that a lot of times the innocuous pets and animals we run across, and I'm wondering if you've had a similar experience with an animal out there as you've traveled to many countries.
Yeah, I hear that story. And my mind goes to elephants, because I've had the horror stories of dealing with people being trampled by an elephant on a weekend safari getaway. You know, they're working in a region where they're prevalent, and they get away and want to get that picture. And I thought to myself, as I was reflecting on it, I've actually chased an elephant wanting a better picture. It's like how stupid I was at that time in life. It's 20 years ago now, you know, or my daughter, who's now 16, she doesn't remember this, but she's so critical of the fact that we rode an elephant in Thailand. And I was chasing an elephant in Ghana when we lived in Ghana. But in South Africa, I knew better than to chase it to get a better picture. So I'd been reprimanded once by that warden.
Yeah.
But riding an elephant in Chiang Mai, if I were to do that again, I wouldn't. That's just not cool the way the animals are treated. That's why my daughter is remiss about how I did that. But I was young. I was in my 20s. It's been 20 years ago. And so that's one thing, you know, the way we treat animals, also the wildness that we do when we're immature.
Yeah, with age comes wisdom. I mean, I've been to Yellowstone and I've seen those people who want to pet a buffalo. And many of us say we probably want to move quickly because we don't necessarily want to be the first responder after they get gored. So we'll just leave that happy talk right there. Why don't we bring Nora into the conversation? Nora, welcome to the New Nomad. Where are you at today? And we'd love to hear some more about the kangaroo story, among other things, as somebody who's been to 60 different countries and more and has a fantastic YouTube on 12 years of travel. So welcome, Nora.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It is a pleasure to be here. I hail you today from Toronto, Canada, where I do have a home base. I was proverbially homeless for 12 full years, and then I got a home base in Toronto for a variety of reasons I won't bore you with, which I've had for a few years. It was only ever, of course, intended to be a place to come and go from, and mostly go than come. But of course, the pandemic has necessitated I stay here a little bit longer than I ever anticipated, but that's okay. There are silver linings to every situation.
Well, I was just going to say, it's funny, isn't it? Because somebody like you who's traveled as much as you have, and I know us, it's a weird feeling, isn't it? Not to be able to travel around. And I know Europe and Canada. I mean, I was even supposed to come to the Canadian Grand Prix in Montreal. Couldn't you, you know, obviously can't get across the border. Tell us, I mean, do you feel like that energy ready to go? Or how do you feel about this?
You know, it's funny you should mention. So coming out of the gate, I was pretty good. I was, I was in Greece when the pandemic got its legs. I came back early, preemptively, I thought. But then a week later, boom, everything shut down. And I thought, oh, no, this is okay. You know, I'm so glad I have a home base. And you know what? Who knows? Maybe I'm ready for a new chapter in life. I don't know. But at the very least, you know, we'll watch the seasons go by. Won't it be great? I think I probably hit the wall a couple of months ago. Now I'm ready to go. I am waiting to become fully vaccinated. And then I'm going to choose the countries that I visit carefully. Because, of course, there are many countries in the world that are still struggling under various waves of pandemics. So, but yeah, definitely the idea of leaving the confines of the neighborhood I've been living in for the last 16 months definitely feels like a new adventure, and I'm looking forward to it. I just hope I remember how to pack all my stuff. You know, like it's feel like a newbie again.
It's, you know, it kind of brings up an interesting thing because you obviously, you know, as somebody who's been a traveler to many spots, as you look at it, is it Europe now? I mean, I hear from a lot of people that because Europe, they're opening the borders up earlier, probably for Canadians and Americans, it's an easier place. Or where would you, you know, when you were kind of looking at things, where do you think is a good place to go once the borders open up? You have somewhere in mind?
You know, I've always got a little hit list of places that I could visit. That said, interestingly, I have discovered that 9 times out of 10, my destination will choose me instead of me choosing the destination. So it usually chooses me in the form of some interesting opportunity, whether it's to speak at a conference or whether it's to visit somebody or to house sit, or, you know, there's a variety of kind of interesting things that come my way. So to that end, actually, I should be speaking at a couple of conferences this coming fall in the States. So the States is probably going to be my first port of call, but I do have a couple of places on my radar. And this is, you know, the pandemic is an ever-changing situation, and I just don't want to find myself stuck abroad. So I'm going to be very careful about what international travel I choose. But hopefully sooner than later, that will not be as much of a going concern.
Yeah, so you're so well-traveled, and you speak on this and other topics. What, you know, of the, when you look back on the last season of your life, what is one of the most memorable destinations that you hit and stayed a little bit longer than you usually do? And why is it so?
I notice you very carefully did not ask me for my favorite country. And I appreciate that because, of course, travel is so contextual. So my experience of a destination and your experience will be completely different things. And thus my favorite country might not be yours. When you gave me that criteria, probably the first place that stood out for me was Peru. I spent 2 years living in the Sacred Valley of Peru. Peru itself being a country of incredible contrast and diversity. I mean, you've got jungles and deserts and high altitude mountains and canyons and I mean, everything. But I was in the Sacred Valley, which was an incredibly special place. And even more bizarre, because my travels have been bizarre from time to time, I was apprenticing with a shaman for those 2 years. So that added a whole new layer to my experience of Peru.
Well, we're on the subject of stories. Tell us the kangaroo story. That one I know people are going to want to hear, but I know we gave a pretty good lead in on that too.
Okay, there are kangaroos in Peru. No. Where were you? Tell us more.
So, you know, to continue the vein of conversation that we started off with in terms of interactions with animals, and now the lexicon of the socially responsible interaction with animals, which of course was not necessarily something that existed in times gone by. When you go to Australia, of course, what do you want to do? You want to hold a koala and pet a kangaroo. So I never had a chance to hold a koala, but I did find myself volunteering in Trade for Free Accommodation a couple of hours northeast of Melbourne. And the property that I was volunteering on also served as an animal sanctuary. So I had a lot of interactions with wild animals or rehabilitated animals that I would not have normally had a chance to have. Not the least of which was Bracken the kangaroo, who on my very first day, I'm walking around on the property and suddenly I look behind me and there's this kangaroo behind me and he's getting closer and closer. And I'm like, oh, I whip the camera out. Like, this is great. Look at this kangaroo here. This is so great. And I'm noticed he's not moving. He's posing for my pictures, which I found a little bizarre, but I didn't want to get too close because I'm like, this is a wild kangaroo. You know, who knows what they could do. Later that night, I'm making dinner and the kitchen door is glass. And I notice there's a kangaroo with its paws up on the glass and its nose pressed to the glass looking at me. And I'm like, I don't know if this is aggression or if this is curiosity, but I call up the homeowners who were in another house down the way. And I said, there's a slightly aggressive looking kangaroo with his nose pressed to my door. Should I be worried? They said, oh no, that's Bracken. We rescued Bracken as an adolescent. He was raised he was raised by some family who found him on the side of the road. But then when he became an adolescent, he became too unwieldy. So the sanctuary that I was at took him in and rehabilitated him to the wild, but he still liked to come back for visits. Well, so began a 6-month love affair with Bracken or Bracken with me, actually, probably more appropriately. He slept on my doorstep every day. As soon as I left, he followed me everywhere I went. And it was an incredible experience. All I had to, I didn't feed him, obviously didn't, you know, encourage it, but he literally followed me around every day for 6 months. He would not leave me alone. And it was, I mean, it was affectionate and beautiful, but it was a little bit creepy as well because he was an adolescent kangaroo and his intentions were maybe not entirely pure. So I had to be careful about maintaining a certain distance from him. Should I find myself in the line of fire, shall we say?
Yeah, yep. Oh my God. Well, hey, listen, you know, maybe Bracken was a soul from an early life, you know, it may have been something quite different, you know, he knows the greater thing.
Who knows? Yes. Maybe we were soulmates in another lifetime.
it's just a wild story. That's awesome.
That took me back to Ghana. I was going from country to country, thinking of animals and experiences. And suddenly this flash came to me that it wasn't a big animal, but I was picking up right after we moved into the village life in Ghana. And I picked up a sink that was upside down in front of the house that we were getting ready to move into. It was a house that had no connection to a borehole or a well. And it was quite primitive. There was an old sink upside down. I picked it up. And underneath it were two scorpions that were much larger than crawfish, smaller than a lobster, larger than a king prawn, you know, those really huge shrimp. They were these scorpions that were just, I didn't know they even existed that size, but with a ferocious bite. You know, luckily it didn't get bit, even though I stuck my hands under this big sink and this porcelain sink and lifted it up. But the things you experience when you're outside your comfort zone, when you're in these cross-cultural environments, just and they mark you for life. I mean, even the sweet ones, like a loving kangaroo or a ferocious, a camel that could throw you, or a scorpion that could, you know, the mambas that would be in our trees that after a bite, you could be dead in 30 minutes if you didn't have antivenom. You know, that was the life at the time that was quite thrilling. I miss that adventure. I miss the near-death experiences I had.
You know something, Andrew? I just want to say this, and this is for our audience too. I like Nora's story a lot better than yours. Yours is kind of grim and scary.
Let's go back to Nora.
I mean, can we go back to Nora? I want to go into a safe... I want to go to a safe place. You know, if the scorpions followed you around for 6 months, maybe there's a message there. But I do think one thing that's great, Nora, when I was, you know, on your website of The Professional Hobo, is you have a great comment there about your travels have gone from the sublime to the terrifying. And I think we may have started with the sublime. Maybe we can transition and start us down that road a little bit. Can you give us a little bit of that continuum and how to protect yourself? Because obviously you're smiling in good form, but I know you had a couple of really unique experiences, scary experiences along the way.
I did indeed. In my 12 years of full-time travel, I survived 3 natural disasters. I had 3 tropical diseases. I was robbed twice. I got into 1 near fatal accident. And I like to say I've survived more breakups than I care to admit to. And that's the downsides. And a lot of that stuff is also life. You know, life happens while you're busy making plans. Life happens while you're living on the road. And it's hard to differentiate what is, you know, life happening to you and what is a travel experience happening to you. I guess the tropical diseases obviously were fairly location dependent. And terms of, you know, there's not many tropical diseases in Canada to worry about, nor natural disasters for that matter. So I guess I put myself in the way of harm a few times. I think after my second natural disaster, I was telling some friends of mine, oh, I'm coming to your country next. And they said, maybe not. Can you just not? I said, what do you mean? They said, well, these things follow you around. We don't want that around. In every case, I was actually quite instrumental in the relief efforts. And that gave me a real sense of purpose and the ability to affect great changes. You know, growing up in Canada, I never found myself geographically near to really significant events that were dramatically changing people's lives and not for the better. So when I found myself in the face and in some cases in the middle of the action of one of these things, my inner Rotarian came out and I did what I could to help people. And that was, into itself, it was a very interesting cultural experience.
It's very, and it's so rewarding. I mean, one of the more rewarding experiences of my life. life is went to Cambodia to build houses, you know, and you just feel good. You feel like you're doing something and maybe even developing that good karma that passes on with folks. So 12 years. And I know you have a background of a certified financial planner. And I know a lot of people that listen to the podcast are like, how can I make my money last? How can I be on the road? That's like, I take it you might have some personal finance tips that you would share with folks. And certainly, you know, maybe on the website too, folks can learn more. How about a few tips?
Sure. Certainly. The first tip, which was something that I discovered fairly early on in my travels when I was tracking all of my expenses, was I discovered, much to my own surprise, that the cost of traveling full time was actually significantly less than it ever cost me to live in one place. Now, that comes with a few caveats in that I employed some really interesting strategies. I saved over $100,000 getting free accommodation around the world, on and off. And there were five different ways to do that. You can do it with volunteering, you can do it with house sitting, you can live on boats, you can do hospitality exchanges, and you can do home exchanges. I wrote a book on it, of course. But so that was a way for me to really save a significant amount of money. And before anybody decides that I was living in a cardboard box on the side of the road, I will tell you that I actually was enjoying forms of accommodation that were really more luxurious than I might even have been able to afford. And I guess the other caveat with me saying that the cost of traveling full time is less than you ever spend to live in one place is you could also spend a lot more money on a travel lifestyle. I mean, really, the sky's the limit for how much you spend. But I think the biggest shift for people who get into long-term travel, especially if they're working remotely concurrently, is they'll realize that it's not a vacation. In that when you go on vacation, you fly somewhere, you're staying in a hotel every day, you're doing activities every day, you're eating out every night, that's going to be expensive. So if you try to extrapolate a week-long vacation into a year, you're going to spend a ton of money. But the reality is you're getting longer-term accommodation, you're working along the way, you're not doing as many activities, you're often cooking, and really just experiencing what it is to live at the destination rather than merely and solely be a tourist there. So the first thing, the biggest tip is it will probably cost you less than you may think. And on my website, I actually demonstrate with income and expense reports for 10 years. I publish these reports to demonstrate and prove that full-time travel can be financially sustainable.
So this wasn't a flip the switch overnight journey for you. You were strategic, it seems. And you did some study you flipped the switch maybe. But you learned some lessons along the way so that I imagine you wouldn't tell someone, just do it and learn through the mistakes you make. No.
In fact, actually, I tell people not to do that because that's what I did. So you can definitely apply a lot more of a science to redesigning your life in this way than the resources, the infrastructure. None of that was available in 2006 when I got started. So I felt like I was the only person to do it, and I hit every bump on the learning curve. So now I try to make sure other people don't have to have that experience.
I mean, it's interesting. We had a guest once that very simple tip. This is for guys. Is just keep your wallet in the front pocket. You know what I mean? They're like, yeah, it's pretty simple, right? You know, we can do all these complex things, but there's some of the simple things and some of the packing tips. And I think that you shared much of that with you. You have a couple great travel tips for folks that you'd love to share.
Do I have to narrow it down to a couple? I mean, geez.
You can go on. Hey,
no, your top 10.
How much time do you have? Well, so many. I mean, really, some of the most amazing and integrative cultural experiences that I had on the road along the way were actually through these free accommodation gigs that I had. But I'll highlight it with just one experience, which I thought was really cool, which was in Spain. There was a program called Vontown. And what this was is a program that was ultimately funded by employers of Spanish people. They would send them to these retreats where they would be matched up with an equal number of English speakers from around the world. So I, as an English speaker, had all of my expenses covered, meals, accommodation, and everything. And then we spent a week together, basically just talking, just conversing. And of course, at the end of the retreat, the idea is their English, their conversational English would have improved dramatically. But in 2 short weeks of doing this program, I met more people throughout Spain and all of Europe that I had places to stay for the next 5 months. I made these amazing connections. And that's not something that I would have been able to make. I would not have met those people had I just been staying at hotels and staying firmly on the tourist path. To that end, you don't even have to do a program like that. Generally say, if you want to meet and mix and mingle with people that you wouldn't normally otherwise get a chance to meet, use special interest groups. You know, like I was a Rotarian and a Toastmaster. So I would attend those meetings around the world and I would be welcome as a member, an international member with open arms, and I would meet all these amazing people who would often say, oh, have you checked this part out? Oh, listen, are you free for lunch tomorrow? I'd love to take you to this place. Oh, come stay with us. And I would have a lot of make these amazing friendships along the way. So even if you're not a Rotarian, let's say you like rock climbing, so find the meetup group for Rock Climbers Anonymous.
Yeah, it's like Solo Hall. Some of you may know that name. He's one that is a driver in pairing governments with attracting the remote worker, the digital nomad. One thing that he looks for when he determines where he's going to go is to make sure there is a volleyball and CrossFit scene, because those are two things he's involved in. So before he goes, he makes sure that he can continue his hobbies, his sports, before he goes there. And that's in tune with what you've said, just to take it into someone else's frame set. It may be their favorite sport. It may be their other hobby of, okay, can I find a birdwatchers group? Because I really want to learn about the birds in blank city or blank region. But okay, you've hit a lot of different places, and I doubt you were bird watching, but what is one of the most overlooked places? You could throw in a person or an experience if you'd rather, an overlooked thing that you think that our listeners should know about from your travels.
I'm stumped because, you know, there's a misnomer about off the beaten path. You know, like there's always this, you know, oh, I want to be a traveler, not a tourist. And I want to get off the beaten path. And the reality is, as soon as someone talks about something, it's no longer off the beaten path. So as soon as I mention an experience that is overlooked, it ceases to be so. Not to say
so
that
you want to keep it a secret.
No,
sorry. See, this,
no, and it's not that any of these things are trade secrets, but also, I think that honing in a little too much on the off the beaten path concept, it's also not easy. You know, like there's a reason the tourist trail exists. First of all, it usually is because there's some really interesting things to see and do. That's why they became tourist activities. So I actually tend to lean into, to some extent anyway, I will lean into being a tourist at a destination, at least as a way to understand the layout of a place, to get a basic understanding of how the place works, what the mentality is, and then I dive in. And where I dive depends entirely on the destination itself. But I will specifically share one adventure with you that is on my bucket list. I haven't done it. It's overlooked because it is brand new. It's in Slovenia. It's a 17-day through hike. It goes from town to town, so you don't have to hike. It's called the Juliana Trail. It goes through the mountains of Slovenia. I am stoked to do this. This is one of the things that is tops on my list for when it would be appropriate to head out there. And it is completely overlooked because it's only opened last year. So if you want to be one of the first on the off the beaten path, then the Juliana Trail should be on your list.
I want that. Since my wife's name is Juliana, the Juliana Trail should be one we walk together in many ways. It is.
I have a tear in my eye, Andrew, at that. Yes, the minute we heard Juliana Trail, that was almost a setup, Nora, yes. when we heard that one.
It was. I've almost got real tears flowing here. I'm such a romantic. But Nora, it is great to have you here today with us. It's been fun. It's been educational. And where can people find that site you've referenced? Where can people find you on social media? Where can people book you to come speak at their conference? Because I know that you really, for keynotes, it's one of those to where you're a sought after. People need to fly you in, whether it's to the corporate scene as they prepare for the work from anywhere movement, all the way to the, you know, these remote conferences. You're one of those sought after people. They should pay to have you there. So where can they get in touch?
I need to put that on my YouTube channel. Can you send me that clip right there? Because that's great. You can just do all of my marketing for me. Just say that. Preface every conversation I have with that.
He's fantastic at that. Great job, Andrew.
Thank you. But seriously, how can they reach you?
My online home is theprofessionalhobo.com. And from there, you can get pretty much everywhere else, which includes my YouTube channel where I have an interview series. But you can certainly search Nora Dunn on YouTube and find me just as quickly. And all of my social channels and everything. Just head to theprofessionalhobo.com first and dive down the rabbit hole and see where you end up.
Fantastic. Well, Nora, thank you for joining us today. You've been as interesting as the Nora Dunn that used to be on Saturday Saturday Night Live, even more entertaining, actually. I'm sure you've not heard that before, but we really appreciate this. And I'm sure we'll have you back again. Andrew, fantastic conversation today. Share with me what you learned other than the Juliana Trail, which I saw you light up.
Yes, absolutely. One of the things that I wish we had had a bit more time on, but you know, I think in 6 months, we're going to have Nora back on and hit some other topics. But some of that is the strategy that I know she's developed over time that I'd love to dive into a little bit deeper. It does take learning from other people's experiences to do this life well. Whether it's subject matter experts from your region dealing with your own national taxes, or how retirement, pension, and life insurance works in your country. I know we have people listening from all over the world, and it's different in every environment. But learning from other people's experiences is the thing that stood out to me as I was listening to Nora. We must be active students.
You know, what I learned is, and I know for our audience, this is going to be great, is, you know, I hear a lot of people say it's very, in their mind, very expensive and difficult to have this lifestyle. And some of the tips she provided on, you know, volunteering, et cetera, that takes care of much of the housing component of things. You know, if you want to investigate, you can live this lifestyle. But I also have to commend Nora for, you know, the adventurousness of 60 countries. And when I watch the 12 years of travel, the diversity of places, you know, the hiking up to the mountains, et cetera. It takes a lot of get up and go. And I think a lot of people post-pandemic are really hoping to live that lifestyle. And maybe the last thing I'll leave is I really enjoy her animal stories more than you, Andrew. You know, I love you dearly, but I don't want to hear about mambas and scorpions. I'd rather hear about nice kangaroos and koalas.
Fine. Next time I'll talk about holding the lion cub and how cute. I'll do the coot thing.
That's marvelous. I'll take that anytime. So just want to remind our audience, the New Nomad's not just a podcast. It's a community of people, ideas, and spirit helping you take advantage of that location-independent lifestyle. We wish you the best travels. We hope to hear from you soon. Stay well and travel well. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to the New Nomad Podcast, where we bring together an incredible community of people and ideas that embody the nomadic spirit. Please remember to subscribe and leave a review. For more amazing tips to help you take advantage of the cross-border lifestyle, please visit us at insurednomads.com/podcast. See you next week.